The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back! That's a buzzer!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody out there? Sam Franco, Chris Brame, back at it again with another exciting episode of The Crossover right here on 960theref.com. Plenty to get to on an all-college football edition of the show.
No Falcons, Sam?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get to see, or maybe fortunately, I didn't get to see the second half of the game, as I did hear about Dan Quinn electing to kick a field goal that the Falcons ultimately missed.
And even had they made it, it wouldn't have mattered, as they didn't get the ball back anyway.
Right, so they shouldn't have kicked it in the first place.
Right, they were down 5, and field goals are only worth 3.
That's right. Yeah, hey, that's good math right there. Yeah, that's radio host math.
Unless they don't, unless they had like the rock and jock rules that they used to have on MTV,
yeah,
where they had like a
10-point
shot and everything.
That's right, but unfortunately the Falcons fell. So we'll put them on the back burner, as the Dogs are your 2017 SEC champions after beating Auburn 28-7. Over at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium this past Saturday, setting up a matchup in the Rose Bowl against Oklahoma, while the other half of the college football playoff will be a rematch of the national championship from the last two seasons in the Sugar Bowl, as Alabama will take on Clemson.
Yeah, I think two great games. The early point spread suggests that they should be tight. I mean, both were opened right around pick'ems.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alabama's moved out to about a 2-point favorite the last I checked, and Georgia was about a 1 or 1.5-point favorite
mm-hmm.
in some spots too. So, you know, last couple of years you'd have Bama and Michigan State, and then last year Bama and Washington with point spreads of north of a touchdown. So, the indications are these should be two really good games. Everyone, did the selection committee get it right? I mean, I think they did. You've got two interesting matchups. One's a rematch, like you said, of the last two national title games, and the other one is a game pitting two teams that rank in the top 11 in all-time wins in college football history that have never, ever played each other.
Yeah, I know, right? That is crazy. But we'll dive into the playoff games here a little more later in the podcast. But for now, we have to reminisce about an amazing game over in Atlanta as Georgia gets revenge yet again, this time against Auburn, after the Dogs earlier in November went over to Jordan-Hare and got pounded. This time it was almost like the exact opposite of what happened to Jordan-Hare, because Auburn marched down the field and scored on their first possession, and then didn't score again.
Yeah, and I mean, Auburn's done that now 4 times. I think the last 4 years now
mm-hmm.
against Georgia, they've scored on their first possession and then not scored at all for the rest of the game. So to see it happen again, it's been a wacky rivalry and a wacky series. And yeah, I mean, Saturday's game almost looked like the same game the two teams played at Jordan-Hare Stadium, except they just switched roles, and Georgia was the team that ended up dominating the game and winning it in the end. Thank goodness.
Yeah, that's right. And you got to give a lot of praise to a bunch of different Georgia players, but the way that Roquan Smith played in this game was unbelievable. I believe he had 6 solo tackles in the first half. And, I mean, he was just all over the place, continuing his great work from throughout the season, but also in particular that game against Tech, where he was really a one-man wrecking crew.
Yeah, and he did it again. He had a huge sack. He recovered both of the fumbles. And, you know, the first fumble that was forced and Roquan was able to recover, I think was, to me, that's the play of the game. Because you're still, at that stage in the game, I felt Georgia was kind of on the brink. Because the way things had started out, Auburn had gone and scored. Georgia hadn't done anything on its first couple of possessions. So they're sitting there 7-0. And at that point, the game did have kind of a feel of, the two teams had just picked up from where they had left off, at Auburn 3 weeks earlier. And, you know, the Dogs were on the verge there of probably being down at least 10-0 because Auburn was inside the red zone there. So to get the ball, you're still only down the one possession. And then Chubb broke off that 16-yard run. Georgia's offense went with that tempo and, you know, was finally able to crack and solve that Auburn defense that they had struggled so much to do up to that point. And, you know, then that game became the game that just kind of snowballed on Auburn the way the game 3 weeks ago at Auburn had kind of snowballed on Georgia, to where it was close. And then all of a sudden, Dogs outscored them 15-0 in the fourth quarter and knocked them out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny how going into the fourth, you know, it's only 13-7. And then Georgia just, like you said, blew things open there in the fourth quarter, the DeAndre Swift touchdown to really cap it off and make it that 28-7 scoreline. And Georgia getting that 2-point conversion, you know, to go 21-7 was also huge.
Yeah, I mean, psychologically for Auburn, if it's still 19-7, you're sitting there thinking, okay, if we score twice, we have the lead. But then when Georgia does get that 2-point conversion, then it's, well, we've got to score 2 touchdowns, and that's just to tie them at this point. And, you know, the way Georgia's defense was playing at that stage in the game, from the Auburn standpoint, just the idea of even scoring twice seemed like a bit of a long shot, and it turned out to be. But, I mean, what a season it's been, and just, I mean, unimaginable to think of where we all were a year ago and how everybody felt a year ago about the program and about the season Georgia just had, to fast forward to now. And this team's on the brink of playing in the Rose Bowl for the first time since January 1st, 1943, in one of 2 semifinal games. And I know we've got the rest of the month to talk about it, but I'm sitting here right now, I think Georgia's going to beat Oklahoma.
I do too, and here's the reason why I think it's going to happen. People keep saying that Georgia's never seen, or Georgia this season hasn't seen an offense like Oklahoma. Well, Oklahoma hadn't seen a defense like Georgia's.
No, that is true. I'll say they did score 31 at Ohio State. Ohio State does have a pretty good, at least front seven.
Going to say it's good, but it's not Georgia.
No, but, I mean, and Ohio State was rebuilding its secondary because they had, 4 guys taken in the first round of last year's draft.
Right.
But their front seven and defensive line is really good. But, I'm with you. My devil's advocate part, and again, Georgia, I believe, is going to win the game. But the reason I feel confident is because of Georgia's offense and its running game against Oklahoma's defense. I do respect that Oklahoma's going to score. The best quarterback Georgia faced this year was Drew Locke.
Mm-hmm.
He was 15 out of 25 for 10 yards an attempt and threw 4 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Baker Mayfield's about to win the Heisman Trophy, so I don't think we're going to completely shut them down, but I do think Georgia can win a shootout with them. I think Georgia can get into the 30s.
Oh, I do too, and I also would say that we've seen these quarterbacks go into these big games after winning the Heisman Trophy and kind of lay eggs. We've seen that before. You know, remember Troy Smith when Florida beat Ohio
Sure.
State in the national championship. I mean, we've seen to where that Heisman win can, I don't know if be a distraction is the right word, but, you know, there's a lot of pressure playing that first game after being awarded the Heisman Trophy.
Well, I mean, there's a lot that you win the Heisman Trophy, and then there's a lot of these different media obligations
mm-hmm.
that you have. And I have no idea how the late-night talk show circuit will work now. I imagine that with the Tonight Show being in New York, I know they always used to go on Letterman.
Right.
I don't know if Colbert's as big a sports guy as Letterman
mm-hmm.
was that would have him on. But, I mean, I'm sure Mayfield will be on.
He'll be on the he'll make the rounds.
He'll be on there. He'll at least be on the Tonight Show,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe end up. Once everyone heads west, he'll end up on Jimmy Kimmel.
Maybe he'll do carpool karaoke with James Corden.
Yeah, there's that one too. You can get in there and do that. So, but even beyond the late night talk show circuit, there's all sorts of, everyone else wants a piece of you because you've just won the Heisman Trophy. So, I've always thought that that's got a little bit to do with why you have seen some of those eggs laid by the Heisman Trophy winner post winning the award.
Yeah, and I think one thing with Oklahoma too is one of their running backs dealing with an accusation from a young woman of rape, and he's denying it, but that's something to keep an eye out for too. And especially with kind of Oklahoma being on that recovering their image, I guess, from the whole Joe Mixon thing, you know, any sort of something like this might be looked at even more harshly in Oklahoma's eyes. So just keep an eye out on that.
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln Riley's going to have, something he's got to try and figure out there, what he wants to do, because I guess the guy does have a protective order that's been filed against
yes,
him, right?
Yes, that is correct.
So, yeah, it's just, it's a nice little distraction that they might have that's not going to hurt Georgia's chances either.
Yeah, but I think you hit the nail on the head. The difference in this game is going to be Georgia's running game and offense against that Oklahoma defense. I think Georgia definitely is going to go into this game with designs on slowing it down. And, can they grind it out? Can they keep Baker Mayfield off the field? And I think that I just don't see Oklahoma being one of these Big 12 defenses. They're probably the best defense or one of the best defenses in the Big 12. But that's not saying a whole lot.
No, and you look at some of their rushing numbers. Their rushing numbers are very pedestrian. And to that, I name a running back in the Big 12. And
yeah, crickets. I got nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we're sitting here talking about this Oklahoma running back and referring to him as the Oklahoma running back. I think, is his name Rodney Anderson?
That's it. Yes.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I'm like not 100% sure, but that's, yeah. Name a Big 12 running back. And this is, you got Chubb, Michelle, and DeAndre Swift. So, I really do think, like, Georgia's...
And let's not forget Elijah Holyfield. Let's not forget Brian Harry. And I mean, those guys are good carries, too.
Like, I just think Georgia's not a not a great matchup for Oklahoma on that front. But
well, the dogs can take the air out of the ball, if you know what I mean. And then that's probably something that Oklahoma is not going to be used to. Plus, you know, Oklahoma has a good offensive line. But, again, they haven't seen a front seven like Georgia's. And I just have a feeling that, you know, the speed on defense is going to be a big key, too.
Yeah. I just think, and I mean, as much as I love Georgia's defense and what the defense has done this year, to me, that's the angle of the game. If you just think that Georgia's going to go in there and Baker Mayfield's got his work cut out for him because he hasn't seen a force like this so far this season, the Big 12's take will be like, well, maybe the SEC's defenses look so good because you don't face any good offenses. And the two best quarterbacks Georgia faced this season were Jarrett Stidham and Drew Locke, and both of those guys had huge games against Georgia the first time they played. Obviously, Stidham didn't, but here's the thing for Georgia. You're not going to get a chance to do over against Baker Mayfield.
No.
You got to get it right the first time, and Georgia didn't get it right against Stidham the first time. And, you know, and obviously Georgia blew out Missouri, but that was because Georgia's offense almost set a school record for total offense in that game. It's not like Missouri's offense didn't have as much success as any team had against Georgia's defense all year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just such an interesting matchup just because it's one that's never happened before. And you would have thought with these two storied programs over the years that maybe Georgia and Oklahoma would have met up once somewhere.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, all the great players that have come through, the history of both. But they are, I read, they're the only two schools in the top 11 all-time in wins that have never faced each other. All the other schools have played each other at some point in their existence. But Georgia and Oklahoma somehow never have, but that'll change on New Year's Day.
Yeah, absolutely, and very excited for it. Very excited to just kind of get the bowl season started here. This is an interesting bowl season because I don't believe there's any teams with losing records that had to go to bowl games.
No, I think there were three teams with winning records that didn't even make it.
Right, and that's crazy because, you know, I know the SEC couldn't fill their bowl spots because the Liberty Bowl, I believe, ended up not getting an SEC team in there because Ole Miss would have been eligible with the six wins. But obviously they had the bowl ban, and then Georgia and Alabama both going to the playoff meant one less team, you know, getting into one of those spots.
Yeah, and then think like even Florida and Tennessee didn't get eligible this year.
That is quite bizarre.
I mean, so, and then throw on that Tech's not eligible either, so you got three of the big boys on Georgia's schedule that didn't even make it to a bowl game this season.
That's right, so Georgia and Oklahoma coming up. The other matchup in the semifinals, Clemson and Alabama. And, you know, I see that Alabama's the favorite right now, but I don't know why. I mean, I feel like Clemson, you know, they have probably the best defensive line in football. Alabama's a little banged up, but they could get, you know, hopefully for them, they'll get healthy during this time off and get ready. And Nick Saban has a very good track record when he has a lot of time to prepare for someone.
Well, and on the other side of that, too, it's, you know, Nick Saban losing back-to-back games against somebody. So usually there's that revenge factor with the Emperor. Maybe that's where Kirby learned it from, knowing about, you know, being able to beat him two times in a row. I mean,
ain't
I guess
trying to lose to Dabo again.
Yeah, and I guess Hugh Freeze is the one that guy that got him back-to-back. That's it, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I mean, otherwise, Saban brings it, and Georgia brought it this year on the revenge tour, and so, I think Alabama's favored probably mostly because they're Alabama.
That's true.
The games that these two have played in the last 2 years in the national championship, you'd like to think that they're about to stage the same kind of battle coming up on New Year's too in the Sugar Bowl, that it should be just a tight down to the wire game.
Should be.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, here's why I like Alabama, and it comes down to Clemson did beat them last year, but it took every ounce of, I mean, of Deshaun Watson.
Oh, yeah.
Having just the game of his life. Twice he did.
Yeah,
and
he
the
did.
First time they still lost.
It wasn't enough the first time.
Right.
Yeah.
And then last year, I mean, it took having that guy have those games just to barely beat Alabama. And now Watson's gone. And this guy, Kelly Bryant, is okay.
He's good.
But, and he's not even comparable to Deshaun Watson.
Well, I think Deshaun Watson ends up as one of the greatest college football players of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, when it's all said and done.
Then he was
him.
A first pick in the draft, or a first round pick
first
in the draft.
Pick,
should
right.
have been the first pick in the draft. But,
hating on Mitchell Trubisky, man.
Yeah.
He was the second pick.
He was the second pick. The Clowns took Myles Garrett.
It's still, I mean, it's a good pick, but they probably should have taken, instead of Deshaun Kizer, should have taken Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
They're the wrong Deshaun.
I think so. But yeah, I mean, I think that's where I, you know, that's kind of the angle I'm playing right now with Alabama is like these last 2 years, yeah, they were tight games, and then Clemson did win last year, but just think about the performance that it took Deshaun Watson needed to have just to, you know, barely eke out a win, and now he's gone.
So what I'm hearing from you is the matchup that some people wanted in the SEC Championship, Georgia and Alabama, you're saying we're going to get that in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the national championship.
I think so, yeah. And that was like, you know, even Jeff was talking to me, too. It's like, you know, he was how this is going to play out is Georgia's still at some point going to have to play Alabama this year, and I think he's going to turn out to be right.
Yeah, it looks like that might be the case, but that would definitely be a game that would move the meter. I mean, Georgia and Alabama not meeting for the SEC championship in Atlanta, but meeting for the national championship
in
Atlanta.
Yeah, well, it's all about the regular season, Sam.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Before we move on here, because there's definitely some coaching stuff to talk about with Tennessee and Florida State and A&M and all these schools, but Alabama getting into the playoff, you know, they're in now. Do you think they deserve to be in?
If there's going to be four spots and there was another team that needed to be in it, yeah, I think Alabama's the team I would have put in there. You know, to the selection committee, if you look at some various computer rankings and power rankings, I mean, there were some that had Ohio State ahead of Alabama, but there were enough that had Alabama ahead of Ohio State that I think the selection committee's position was justified. I mean, in the end, like, am I going to stand up and really just, like, defend Ohio State? They lost by 31 points at Iowa.
And that was the key. I mean, if you're really trying to get the best teams, I know that Georgia had a big loss to Auburn, but they avenged it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that removes that doubt there. And with Alabama, their loss was, you know, only to Auburn. Their loss way better. I know Oklahoma is in the college football playoff, and they beat Ohio State. But that's the thing. Ohio State lost at home to Oklahoma, and then I think they were on the road when they
lost at Iowa. But even like, okay, so then a pro-Ohio State argument you heard was like everyone like zeroed in on the fact that, well, Alabama played Mercer. So if Ohio State had played Mercer instead of Oklahoma, they'd have one loss and be a conference champion.
Well, did Ohio State have did they not have a 1AA opponent on their schedule?
No. I'll give the Big Ten credit. They really don't play 1AA teams. But I mean, okay, they didn't, but they did play like UNLV.
That's what I'm saying.
But,
like, I mean,
but still, okay, let's say they played Mercer instead of Oklahoma. Okay, then they're 11-1 or 12-1 in Big Ten champs. Would they have gotten in then? And I'm telling you, I still probably would have, after the precedent that was set last year, I still would have argued, well, Ohio State did lose by 31 points at Iowa. Yeah, they won the Big Ten, and Alabama didn't even get to the conference championship game. But yeah, Alabama's only loss was at Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
So they still have a least worse loss, even if they had the same record. So, you know, the thought that, well, Ohio State's being punished because they scheduled Oklahoma. I mean, Bama did play Florida State, too. Florida State just turned out to not be any good, though.
Yeah, that's
so
the thing.
It
Nobody's
counts.
Well, here's the thing. Nobody's giving Alabama credit for that win over Florida State.
Well, they shouldn't because Florida State did stink.
But Alabama's the team that knocked DeAndre Francois out.
Sure.
What if DeAndre Francois hadn't gotten hurt? I mean, I'm not saying they would have been a national championship contending team or anything, but they probably would have been much better.
They still shouldn't have been that bad. Georgia's quarterback got knocked out, and we had a true freshman play this year, and we're in the Rose Bowl.
Well, you're trying to compare Jimbo Fisher to Kirby
That's
Trump.
True,
Come
yeah.
On, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Jimbo Fisher is like Gene Chizik right now. The only reason he has a national title is because he had the best player in college football.
Yeah,
because
of Jameis Winston. That's why
I'm
don't get like Texas A&M to me. They traded the Kevin Sumlin, whose greatest success came because of Johnny Manziel.
Mm-hmm.
They get rid of him and hire a coach whose greatest success came because of Jameis Winston.
And that's what we'll transition to now here on the crossover, Sam Franco, Chris Brain, the coaching carousel. And we'll start with Jimbo Fisher, who I think is a punk, all right? Jimbo Fisher, the way he handled his exit from Florida State, you know, he had that whole thing at the radio show where the guy stood up and confronted him about it, and they kicked that guy out, and the Florida State, like, attendant or whatever was, like, shoving the guy out of the room.
Yeah.
Like, dude, if you touch me, don't touch me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, but the thing about Jimbo for me is, like, the moment that his team starts to crack, which is this season, he just dips. He just leaves. And yeah. I get it. There was a lot of money being offered from Texas A&M, but I don't know, man. For me, he just kind of comes off as a punk. And I don't think he's going to be super successful at Texas A&M because I haven't seen it that he's that great of a coach. I mean, he'd won a national title, but again, why? Because he had Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think the guy's a lousy coach, but I also don't see him being a guy that's going to all of a sudden Texas A&M, which has not been a national power. They haven't won a conference championship since 1998, that he's that good of a coach that he can bring that program to that next step.
Well, you got to contend with Auburn, Alabama, and LSU every year.
Yeah. Again, I mean, I see similarities between Kevin Sumlin and Jimbo Fisher. I mean, Kevin Sumlin had that great year when they went to Tuscaloosa and won, and mm-hmm. were sitting there at 11-2. They had Johnny Manziel,
yep.
And you know the difference is Jimbo Fisher was at Florida State. He was at a powerhouse program, which Texas A&M isn't. So when he had his Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, he was able to cash that in. For a national championship, but yeah, I mean, I'm with you that there's something about him too that that doesn't sit right with me, and
he's
I think
a punk.
I think it's at the beat like his press conference too when he started talking about you know the relationship with the administration at Florida State and kind of suggesting that maybe they weren't
well, they wouldn't build him a standalone facility, and so he said I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, but they all you know, but they gave into so many of his other demands and things that he wanted, including paying him a ridiculous salary. They did just give him a contract extension last year, mm-hmm. but it's like so. Here's this coach that's sitting there and saying like, well, my administration didn't fully support me, but pretty much every step of the way they showed that they were.
Well, it's certainly going to be an interesting time for him at A&M. I don't know. You know, they signed him to, what, a 10-year contract, I think?
Fully guaranteed, $75 million.
I'd say he probably lasts half that long, if that. I mean, they might keep him around longer than they would normally because of the massive buyout that's going to be attached to that contract.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the key there is just you know, how much if they're fully committed to him. Then.
Right. Well, when their AD was asked, why'd you give him a 10-year contract, he said because he wouldn't sign a 15-year contract.
Yeah, I mean, well, I know. They were like all head over heels in love with them, that they only shoot for the stars and they just get the best and there's no accepting the second best. And they went and, you know, they got him. I mean, I guess that's the guy they targeted to their credit. That's who they wanted and they did get him. There wasn't like this messy situation where, you know, like my goodness, now at Tennessee, whoever they end up hiring to be their head coach, I mean, you're going to have the feeling that he was like the seventh or eighth guy that they wanted.
And before we jump fully to the Tennessee search, I had a little bit more with Florida State here, but I did want to ask you about did you see the message board posting? It was on Twitter. It was like all over Twitter about how some fan asked one of the A&M beat guys, you know, did it seem like Reveille was comfortable around Jimbo and did it seem that they had a rapport right off the bat because that might speak well to recruits if Jimbo gets along well with a freaking dog.
Yes, I did see that, yeah.
That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. But it fits the Texas A&M fan base. Because, you know, if any fan base in the country has been described more as a cult, I don't know who it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes, yeah. Nowadays, though, I start to wonder about, because, I mean, any.
If that was serious.
Well, yeah, like a Texas fan could have gone on there and done that just to make them look
still,
goofy. But, yeah,
like,
I mean, it is like, huh?
He's like, did he get along with Reveille?
Well, I'll tell you what the best is, though, is yesterday. Which would be what today's day? Wednesday. We're recording
That's
this,
right.
So I guess it was Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona State posted this video of Herm Edwards.
God.
Did you see that?
Yes.
His first day on the job.
He didn't know that they were the Sun Devils.
Well, there was that, but it was like this video of him going around, like all and meeting people and shaking hands and introducing himself. And it was like Arizona State tweeted it out from their official account.
Yeah.
It was like, here's an exclusive behind the scenes look at Herm Edwards' first day on the job. And like every comment under it was like, you need to be out recruiting.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to be out, you know. And he's back in Bristol.
Oh, my God.
Like today. Like he was on, like, I think he was on Golic and Wingo this morning.
Yeah, I mean, just.
It's like, dude, what are you doing?
Horrible hire.
Well, they're like,
Like, I mean, borderline, like, they might not win games.
Well, it's
there.
Like they were restructuring how they did it, and they want him to be like an NFL GM. And then they kept every single member of the staff, including Todd Graham's son.
Yeah.
Like, every single member of that staff other than Todd Graham was retained.
Like, he's really going to be just sort of like a CEO figurehead
right.
kind of the program.
Yeah, he's not going to really probably do – he'll recruit, and he'll be like the CEO motivator, but I don't see him having a whole lot of impact on the field.
Yeah, but it was like – so here's this video of him just going around, and he's meeting the secretary and shaking. And, like, he is. He seems like a really, like, genuine, like – warm, like, nice guy.
Yeah, like, dude, you need to be out recruiting.
Yeah, and there is something, like, when you see the hard edge that some of these football coaches have, that they're, you know, going around to everybody there and introducing themselves and getting to know them and all. But it is like, no, you're, like, when Kirby got this job, I think the
he
first...
He started recruiting, like, immediately.
I think the first thing he did was he went to Ben Cleveland's home, right?
Yeah,
that was,
yes.
like, the first thing
yeah.
he did. And,
and then he got the Kirby copter.
Yeah. Meanwhile, though, like, Herm is just... It's like, everyone under there was like... you need to be recruiting. ABC.
Well,
always be recruiting.
I mean, it was just such a bad sign when the guy was like, I'm blah, 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 Devil's Digest. And Herm Edwards was like, Devil's Digest?
Yeah.
Oh, hold on, I'm a Catholic now.
Yeah.
It's like,
I don't like Devils.
Dude, whoa. He's, and then I think the guy who was asking the question was like, well, there's a lot of Devils around here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, just brutal. And Herm Edwards was talking about, like, he's like, people say he ain't coaching a while. Well, he used to play for Dick Vermeil. And he took a lot of time off coaching. It's pretty good after he came back, right? It's like, what are you talking about?
But Dick Vermeil,
it was like an hour-long press conference, and it was like gibberish and nonsense
yeah.
the whole time.
But Dick Vermeil, though, when he had previously coached, had actually coached in the Super Bowl. Herm Edwards is 20 games under 500 as an NFL coach.
Herm Edwards is only like relevant because of his quotes, you know, that you play to win the game and all that stuff.
Well,
and I love Herm Edwards as an analyst, don't get me wrong. I thought this was an interesting outside-the-box hire. But as soon as I saw that press conference, I was like, okay, this isn't good.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, Herm Edwards is just a guy who's been screaming at us on TV for the last 10 years.
Don't press send.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Herm there is going to be interesting. Florida State, you know, we talk about Jimbo going to A&M. Florida State hired Willie Taggart from Oregon. And I think that's a pretty good hire. It's weird that Willie Taggart will have recruited kids for three different schools within a calendar year.
Yeah,
you know,
and moved from Tampa to Eugene.
To Tallahassee. Very bizarre. And I feel bad for the Oregon kids because, you know, I mean, they're going to have to go through this all over again. And Mario Cristobal, you know, the former FIU head coach, has been named their interim coach. I think Kevin Sumlin's a name to look out for with Oregon.
Yeah.
But
Cristobal could get that job.
He could, too.
He's a good coach.
That's the thing. Yeah, he's definitely not a bad coach, but certainly something to look out for there. And then we'll bring it back to Tennessee, who after – completely getting this wrong for weeks and weeks and weeks. Looks like they might be actually getting it right now that Philip Fulmer's taken over. They've had two interviews with Mel Tucker. They've had two interviews with Kevin Steele. Looks like they're talking to Jeremy Pruitt. Of course, T. Martin is involved in this as well. So, you know, there's plenty of different candidates out there. As dog fans, let's hope they don't take Mel Tucker because he's been very impactful on this defense and in recruiting. But for them to have gotten it so wrong and then, you know, bring Fulmer in to kind of steady the ship, it looks like they're at least, you know, the Keystone Cops element of this looks to be over with.
Yeah, as of this moment, is Jeremy Pruitt seem like he's now the front runner? But, I mean, if they hire Jeremy Pruitt, what are they doing? Are they just going the same route that a lot of these schools have gone? And like, well, let's just get a Saban assistant.
Exactly.
And now in this case, too, it'd be specifically a defensive coordinator because, like, oh, well, hey, look, Georgia's having success with their former defensive coordinator.
Look, I like Jeremy Pruitt, but in terms of being that figurehead and guy that runs your franchise, basically, is what I'll call it, there's Kirby Smart, and then there's Jeremy Pruitt. They seem very far apart in terms of that leadership ability and to be the front of a program.
Well, yeah, I mean, even when Pruitt was here as the defensive coordinator, there were some thoughts that, you know, maybe he wasn't, you know, the warmest and fuzziest guy.
Right.
And there was, you know, he created a lot of that tension that seemed to exist in that what turned out to be Coach Rick's last year here of 2015. I mean, up to the point that there was, you know, there were stories afterward that there might have been sort of like an attempted coup
yes.
of Pruitt to overthrow Coach Rick to
that
take
backfired
over.
Backfired in his face.
Yeah, but so, I mean, that's, you know, that'd be one another issue that you'd have to definitely consider if you were Tennessee, but at least, I mean, things have kind of quieted down there to where, you know, they can go and make a level-headed hire.
I was
going
to say, it's not like a joke anymore. Like, they've righted the ship a little bit in terms of, you know, not being this laughingstock, and they got John Curry out of there, so now they can, you know, get back to being Tennessee, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they're not being turned down by the NC State head coach publicly.
Brutal.
Yeah.
All right. So, Dogs in Oklahoma, in the Rose Bowl, in the college football playoff. We'll have plenty more on that throughout the coming weeks as the Dogs are getting ready to head on to Pasadena. And if you are heading out to Pasadena, well, I will see you out there, and good luck getting those plane tickets. That is a ridiculous.
Oh, have you already looked?
Well, I already got mine.
How much are we being gouged?
And well, I mean, right now, I mean, you're talking about like maybe $800-900 for a flight. I mean, luckily, I booked mine as soon as Georgia won the SEC championship game, because it could have backfired on me. Either they gone to New Orleans,
yeah,
but I just went ahead and booked a flight, so I got in a little bit early. So I wasn't in the super bad price range, and I used my SkyMiles anyway, so I don't really know what the exact conversion would be. But, yeah, I was looking at flights now, and just good luck, Georgia fans. That is an expensive flight, way more expensive than getting tickets to the game.
Maybe you have to do a train, take a train.
Is that possible? Can you do that nowadays?
I think so.
Can you Amtrak to LA?
I'm pretty sure when Georgia last played out there, they had to take a train out there.
Train.
So.
Well, that was a long time ago. Yeah. I don't know if
that's 1942.
I don't know if you can still do that. But, again, we'll have plenty more on this game in the lead up to it, and as Georgia's players navigate through the postseason awards. So, for Chris Brame, I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening. Back next week with another exciting episode of The Crossover right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.